Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. My name is Marcus Cole, Director of Soccer Operations and Branding. Now, before we begin today's show, just wanted to take a moment that once you've had a chance to check out our program, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. That helps you stay up to date on all the latest content from us and helps us get the word out to others to let them know that we're providing valuable information for soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Chris Furman, licensed athletic trainer, certified athletic trainer in the state of Florida. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Marcus.
Why don't you go ahead, before we dive into things, everything athletic trainer, why don't you go ahead and just give us a little bit of history about you, your background, and your certifications and qualifications?
Definitely. So I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts. I've always had an interest in healthcare and sports. The reason I got into athletic training, actually, is because my junior year of high school, I tore my ACL playing football. And that was really my first interaction with an athletic trainer. It was from that point on, I kind of realized like I wasn't going to be a professional athlete, too short to play basketball, not big enough for football. So being an athletic trainer, I still got to be essentially a part of all the teams, and I got to work in healthcare as well. So that really fueled my passion for it. Came down to Florida to get my undergrad in athletic training from the University of Tampa. From there, I've worked at a bunch of different places. I worked at the professional baseball level. I've been working at the high school level for the past 5 years now. I got my master's degree from California University of Pennsylvania, and I got that in exercise science and wellness promotion. Basically, I've been using that as a tool to help me with injury prevention for a lot of my athletes. Currently, I'm working at a high school in Wesley Chapel, Florida, full-time as their athletic trainer, and I also work as an adjunct professor at the University of Tampa.
Wonderful. Why don't you go ahead and just give us a little bit of background of what exactly is an athletic trainer?
Awesome. So the quick and easy answer I'll occasionally give people is I'll ask them if they watch sports at all. 99% of the time they'll say yes, and I'll just kind of respond with, well, whenever an athlete gets hurt, the people that run out onto the field, those are the athletic trainers. Essentially, athletic trainers, we perform musculoskeletal assessment of injuries. We provide any immediate or emergency treatment if it's necessary. We can develop a differential diagnosis. Basically, we can say, hey, it's this injury. Then we can develop a plan of treatment for that injury. Even going beyond muscles and bones, we're also trained in assessing general medical conditions, being able to identify and spot red flags for things non-orthopedic. So things such as concussions or heat-related illnesses, even internal injuries such as organ lacerations. Athletic trainers, in order to even become one, you actually need to graduate with a degree in athletic training from an accredited program at a 4-year university. Currently, this can be done. You can get the bachelor's degree in athletic training or an entry-level master's degree in athletic training. But starting in 2022, to be an athletic trainer, you're going to have to get a master's degree in athletic training before you can even sit for your certification exam. That certification exam, that's a national certification exam, so it spans throughout the entire U.S. Once you pass that exam, you get that ATC credential, and that's required to practice athletic training in 48 states and the District of Columbia. On top of that, 49 states and the District of Columbia also have some sort of state regulation of athletic trainers, such as licensure. So the requirements to obtain licensure differs from state to state. They can also kind of mandate what athletic trainers are allowed to do.
Right.
Yeah, and that's really kind of the gist of how to become an athletic trainer. So there's a lot of confusion about it. So I actually get a lot of people tell me they want to be an athletic trainer and they plan to go to college for like sports medicine or exercise science or health science, something like that. Really, the only way to become an athletic trainer is to get a degree in athletic training. That is the only way. So what makes that a little scary is California is the only state that doesn't have any type of regulation for athletic trainers. So you can actually have an individual with no training in athletic training. They have no education whatsoever, but they can claim to be an athletic trainer. So basically, you'll have an individual claiming to be a medical professional, potentially attempting to provide medical treatment and determining if an individual is healthy enough to continue playing when really they have no idea what they're doing or talking about aside from maybe watching some documentaries on medicine and just applying that minimal knowledge that they have.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's crazy. So we've been working very hard for a long time to get California to do some type of state regulation. We seem to be doing some damage on that front, but still, currently, there's no form of regulation.
Well, I know that you're very active in that space and trying to get more word out in regards to athletic trainers. And, you know, here in the state of West Virginia, I mean, my daughter has played at the high school level, and we don't have athletic trainers. I mean, they do when it comes to football. And I don't know how the situation of how that all is instituted, whether the football program pays for it themselves or anything along that lines. I don't know. But, you know, when we're out at training or out at matches, we don't have anybody on staff there to do that. Tell us why it's so important. I mean, some states have them. They mandate them that they, you know, I remember saw a tweet that you had something about Hillsborough County or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were mentioning about that they now have that available. What's the importance of, and this is kind of just educating the people here in our state of why having an athletic trainer is so important.
Yep. So my mantra is essentially we need to be proactive, not reactive. So over the summer, we actually had a student athlete here in Hillsborough County, so Tampa, Florida. He passed away during summer conditioning. And that school actually did have an athletic trainer, but I believe the company that hired that athletic trainer and contracted them out didn't cover any summer hours at the school. So essentially, there was no athletic trainer there. There's no healthcare professional. And basically, they found out, they actually just released the autopsy results not too long ago, that this athlete died of what's called exertional hyperthermia, most likely exertional heat stroke related. We actually found out later on that the parents of this athlete told the coaches that he had never played in sports before and, you know, to kind of keep an eye on him. And I'm sure the coaches did everything that they could. I know that they meant well in everything they did. They did CPR. They called 911 immediately. But the thing is, the coaches, they're hired to coach.
Right.
It's not really fair to them to kind of try to coach and educate these athletes on how to play the game properly, but also trying to keep an eye out to see if there's any kids kind of stumbling a little bit or not acting completely normal. It's not fair to them. They're not trained to do that, and that's not their job. It's not what they're getting paid to do. So having an athletic trainer at all practices and games and matches, it's so, so important because that's what we do. We're just constantly surveying the field, making sure everybody's upright. Nobody's throwing up. That's a sign of possible heat illness. We're making sure nobody's kind of staggering around. Everybody's knowing where they're supposed to be. So it's just you have a trained and qualified professional ready to spring into action at any moment. And we're there to be able to provide treatment for anything from a jammed finger or a sprained ankle to potentially someone going into sudden cardiac arrest. That's what we're trained to do. It's what we've been educated to do. So why risk an athlete's life or a student, a child's life, when you don't have to? You can have somebody there who knows what to do. One of the big things I like to point out is exertional heat stroke. Not many people know that. That has a 100% survival rate if you follow the gold standard of care. Now, this athlete in Hillsborough County that passed away, he got care. He got 911 called, CPR was administered, he got shocked when the paramedics got there. That's not the gold standard of care. The gold standard of care for anybody going through exertional heat stroke, you actually need to put that athlete in an ice bath. It's right. More than just kind of sitting and waiting. Even when paramedics get there, you need to be monitoring that person's core temperature, because if you take that person out of the ice bath too soon, that person could still die. So you actually need to wait to transport to the hospital until their core body temperature is below 103 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the only time we allow athletes to be transported in Pasco County. We actually have that like written out, set in stone. That is our standard of care. We're not allowing transport until their core temperature gets to this point. No matter what paramedics are doing or saying, we do not let them go.
You know, it just seems like such a huge responsibility to lay on coaches. I mean, I've coached at the high school level in swim, and you know, I mean, I'll be honest with you in regards to, I mean, my experience is in soccer, just because my daughter has played the sport for so long and stuff like that. And I mean, you know, some of the coaches at the high school level here in our state are usually teachers. You know, they get, in some counties, they get, I don't know if this is a statewide thing, but they get preferential consideration for these coaching vacancies, as opposed to somebody who, you know, I mean, we could get Pep Guardiola come in and be apply for a high school coaching job, and he may not get it, you know.
Yep.
And that kind of thing. It seems like a huge responsibility and such a huge liability to lay on our coaches at that level.
It really is. And that's just kind of another thing, the benefit of having an athletic trainer present. You develop a sense of rapport with all the coaches, the parents, the athletes. So they won't be afraid to approach you with any type of injuries, whether it's physical, mental, even if they're just having some type of personal or family issue, they aren't afraid to come up to you and just kind of talk to you about it. Another statistic that was put out there by Stanford Children's Health, approximately 62% of organized sports-related injuries occur during practice. So it doesn't really make sense for schools to have athletic trainers only come for games when that's when there's only 38% of the injuries.
Right.
It makes no sense. If you're going to do one or the other, statistics would say you should probably have them just at the practices. That's where the overwhelming majority of injuries occur.
Right. If you think of it, you know, from in our state, you know, there's 18 to 20 matches, you know, so on average two per week, and then you're training three other days. So, I mean, you're only covering, if they're only at the matches, you're only covering 40% of that athlete.
Yep.
And you're missing the entire 60% where, you know, a lot of that stuff happens.
Exactly. And one of the big hot topics right now in the news is concussions. So a lot of people don't know, one, you don't have to get hit in the head to get a concussion.
Yep.
You can get bumped and just get kind of jarred and you can get a concussion. You don't need any type of contact to the head. And number two, not all concussions have headaches. So it's like a kid could have a concussion and they'll be saying, I don't have a headache, it's not a concussion. Some coaches might believe that because they think, yeah, that's true. So not all coaches are educated on that aspect. So having a full-time athletic trainer who is able to develop that relationship with the athletes and we get to actually know them, we can kind of spot, like, you're not really acting right. Let's talk about this a little bit. You kind of seem a little slow, or you look confused. You don't really appear all there. Tell me about what happened at practice or what's been going on. I saw you kind of get hit in the side, and ever since then you've been kind of off. What's going on? Tell me how you feel. So somebody who is a part-time athletic trainer who doesn't really know the athletes, they might kind of think, wow, that kid's kind of slow. He or she doesn't really know what he's doing out there. They might not be able to recognize that's not normal.
What are some things that we can do? I mean, you mentioned being proactive. What are some things that we can do as parents? What can we do as coaches to, I don't know, whether it's starting the dialogue, starting the conversation of getting athletic trainers available in our schools and in our programs?
You just got to be vocal. I think that's the biggest thing. That's what I've been doing in Hillsborough County, being vocal, and you have to educate. A lot of schools and counties, administrators, they don't really know the full aspect of athletic trainers. They don't know everything that we can do, not only for the athletes, but the school and the county itself. It's been proven that schools with athletic trainers, they actually have of lower occurrence of injuries as opposed to schools without. That's both acute and recurrent injuries, because we're able to do injury prevention techniques with our athletes. We're able to kind of identify so-and-so has limited range of motion in his or her ankle, which can predispose them to injuries. Let's kind of work on that. Let's figure out why you have that limited range of motion, or why is your strength so weak on this side as opposed to the other. We need to work on that so that your chances of injury go down. On top of that, we actually save schools and counties money, because I'm sure, I wish I had a percentage on this, but there's so many times when I have an athlete that has some type of head injury or concussion, I'll go to talk to the parents or the guardians, and they'll say, okay, we're going to take them to the emergency room right now. You don't have to go unless there's any red flags. So we actually prevent unnecessary trips to the emergency room, which in turn leads to decreased injury claims. So the school or the county's insurance plan doesn't have to reimburse all these families for these unnecessary visits. So we're actually saving schools and counties money, because they don't have to pay out all this money to families that went to the ER for no reason. Granted, some of these injuries might be scary. Like, obviously, concussions are scary. That's a brain injury. Sometimes a rolled ankle just blows up humongous, but there's really no signs of a fracture. But because it's so different, parents get scared. And that's completely understandable, especially if they're not knowledgeable in medicine. So their first instinct is, we need to go to urgent care. We need to go to the emergency room right now. When in reality, if there's really no red flags, if you can still walk on that rolled ankle, granted there might be a limp, or you have a headache, but that's really it. You don't really have any what we call red flags. There's no need, because they're not going to be able to do anything for you at the ER. They'll get a CT of your head, but you can't see a concussion on any diagnostic imaging.
Right.
Really, the only reason they do that CT is to make sure you don't have a brain bleed, which is something we educate our parents about. We educate them on what to look for and when to go to the emergency room.
What I find, and I want to see if you agree with this, I think maybe at the level of high school, sometimes we don't give maybe enough credit to the fact of having strength and conditioning, having athletic trainers, having all these things, all these different components going into a student athlete. Because, you know, I mean, some of these student athletes, this is the only athlete that they're going to be. I mean, there aren't, not everybody that plays high school soccer plays travel soccer. You know, they may be, back when I grew up, you know, travel sports was not a big thing. So you played soccer in the fall. Then you went on to play high school basketball. Then you played high school baseball in the springtime and things along that lines. And, you know, if you're in that cycle of being you know, maybe just a strict high school athlete and things along that lines. I think maybe some people kind of brush it off a little. Oh, it's just high school sports. It's, you know, they're not overly serious about that kind of. So what do we need athletic training? You know, nobody's going to get injured, you know, and if they're injured, it's usually, you know, it's a sprained ankle or, I mean, it's nothing catastrophic. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. And that's just kind of going into, that's almost, unfortunately, it's like an adolescent mindset. That is the kid who's saying, who's riding his bike. Parents are yelling at him to put on the helmet. And the kid's like, I'm not putting on my helmet. I'm not going to fall and hit my head. Every single person has thought that at some point. And
I thought that until the day I went up and over my handlebars one day.
Exactly. And it's the same thing with the person that doesn't wear their seatbelt in the car. I'm not going to get an accident, get thrown through the windshield. Schools that think that they don't need an athletic trainer because they're not going to have anyone go into cardiac arrest. They're not going to have any type of life-threatening injuries. It's ignorant. It really is, because everybody thinks that way until it happens to them. So why are you even going to risk it? It makes zero sense to me.
And I would just think from the liability standpoint, especially in today's society, I just can't imagine why you would risk it. I know at the state level with the West Virginia Soccer Association, any state activity that we have an athletic trainer present.
Awesome.
You know, what would, you know, what, this, you know, that one time we, you know, if we wouldn't have it and something, you know, and you always got to prepare. And I always hate to focus on the negative, but what happens if something catastrophic happens?
Exactly. And that's what I get scared of with my athletes, because we have counties around us that don't have athletic trainers. So the only team I travel with is the varsity football team. So there have been times where I go to a neighboring county without athletic trainers, and I have to play athletic trainer for both teams the entire game, and it's very exhausting. But then there's times like during soccer season when I have my athletes traveling to that county, and it's like, I know that school doesn't have an athletic trainer, and I can't be there because I have a basketball game tonight, so I have to cover that. So in the back of my mind, the entire night, I'm just thinking, I hope nobody gets hurt because I know there's no athletic trainer there.
Is that something, and I'm maybe throwing you a curveball here, right? But it just kind of popped into my head. You may or may not know the answer to this, and I won't hold you to it, but can boosters, booster organizations come through to hire an athletic trainer to come to these events and be present and pay for it out of the Boosters Association? Or do you know if that's something that they probably have to go through the school to do?
I believe they would still have to go through the school, but the boosters are an extension of the school. So I believe that they can pay for really whatever they want, as long as the school approves it. That's something that a lot of athletic trainers have been talking about in regards to maybe a part-time athletic trainer trying to convince their school to hire them on full-time, but the school say, oh, we don't have the funds, but the boosters program just bought maybe the football team a brand new RV to bring everything to their away games. It's like, so you can spend $20,000 on this giant truck, but you can't afford an athletic trainer full-time for the whole year. So I don't see any reason why a booster couldn't pay for an athletic trainer. There'd have to be some things written out in regards to who does the athletic trainer work under. Are they employee of the school or the county? Is the boosters paying a third party to contract an athletic trainer to the school? If so, who is their team doctor? Because athletic trainers have to work under and with a physician. So we have to have standing orders from the physician, basically stating what we're allowed to, what we're not allowed to do. So for instance, my standing orders, they state that if I have an athlete with a dislocated shoulder, I'm allowed to reduce it. Whereas something like a dislocated hip, where that's a medical emergency, one, I wouldn't even want to try to do it, but my standing orders don't even allow me to, so I'm not going to do it.
It sounds like a lot of conversation, but I think that might be a worthwhile way to go for some schools, because I can't imagine a school that, you know, if the boosters came and said, listen, we want, you know, the soccer boosters want to have somebody, you know, even if it was just for them, you know, that we'll pay for it. You know, I can't imagine a school going, oh, no, we can't have that.
100%. And again, it would just have to be the athletic trainer. They had to have to go through the whole background process, like any hire for a school. They'd have to do the whole background check, drug test, all of that. But there's actually a company called Go4Ellis that actually does that. They will reach out to local communities, or people will reach out to them saying, hey, we have this tournament going on. We need this many athletic trainers. We're going to pay them this much per hour. Can you advertise this? Go4Ellis will then obviously advertise it with all the details, the hours, the pay rate, and athletic trainers can log into the app and just kind of scroll down. They'll see all the postings and they can choose to accept to work any of these events. So high school soccer program, it's something they could definitely do.
Before we wrap things up here, Chris, why don't you just kind of recap just again for our audience, just to really give them and to drive the point home of why it is just so important that we have athletic trainers for our athletes.
It is so important. Athletic trainers, they do so much. We have five main domains that we practice, we're trained and educated in. Trained in injury and illness prevention and wellness promotion. So we're able to identify risk factors for injuries such as limited range of motion or lack of strength. We educate athletes on proper nutrition and hydration. We design and implement site-specific emergency action plans. So if somebody gets hurt at the football field, we're going to know the role of every single person in calling 911, and it's going to be different than the baseball field. Domain two, examination, assessment, and diagnosis. That's pretty self-explanatory. We can examine the athlete, the injuries. We do an assessment, and we provide a differential diagnosis. Immediate and emergency care, again, pretty self-explanatory. We're able to provide the necessary and the proper treatment for any type of emergency, whether it's a compound fracture, heat stroke, sudden cardiac arrest. We know what we have to do immediately. Therapeutic intervention, when is ice okay? When is heat okay? Acetaminophen, so Tylenol versus ibuprofen. A lot of people don't know that somebody with a head injury, we highly discourage people from using ibuprofen. Reason being is there's something called a subdural hematoma, which is a very slow bleed in the brain. Ibuprofen is a blood thinner. So if you take some ibuprofen, you're going to make that bleed speed up and potentially cause that person to die. Whereas acetaminophen doesn't thin the blood. It just kind of helps with the pain. We also create therapeutic exercise plans, and we can work with a physical therapist to create that plan. And finally, healthcare administration and professional responsibility. So that's documentation of injuries, progress notes, abiding by local, state, and federal regulations, complying with HIPAA. So if so-and-so just maybe tore their ACL and there's a scout there and they ask, oh, what happened? We know we're not going to say, oh, so-and-so tore their ACL, done for the year, not going to be able to play in college. And then obviously on top of all that, we're there for emergencies where you take that pressure off of the coaches and administration who aren't trained in any type of healthcare, most likely, and we're able to respond to it. There's actually been multiple times this year at football games. Luckily, I have a team physical therapist who's also an athletic trainer who would come to some of my football games, and just so happened the games that she came to, I would get a call over the radio. Hey, Chris, we need you at the front gate. Hey, Chris, we have an injury in the stands. So my school uses me for more than just my athletic injuries. I've had people have seizures in the stands, or fall going up the stairs and actually dislocate their kneecaps. So I'm able to provide treatment for that as well. Basically, we're there to be proactive and not reactive. We don't want administrators and parents and friends to have a mindset of, what if? If you have an athlete die at your school, I never want somebody to have that feeling of, what if we had an athletic trainer there? Maybe my son or daughter wouldn't be dead today if we had that athletic trainer there. And they can kind of rest easy knowing, even if that person did die and we were there, we gave that athlete every possible chance to survive. We gave them the best possible care. Everything that needed to be done was done. But unfortunately, there are some circumstances where even if there's a doctor there, that person's still gonna die. But I think people will be able to rest easier knowing that there isn't that slight chance, maybe my son or daughter would still be alive if an athletic trainer was there. And I think that's probably the worst feeling in the world, knowing that your son or daughter could still be alive today if you had a medical professional there, if an athletic trainer was present.
It's a tragic situation, to say the least.
Yep.
Chris, obviously you're very active on Twitter, which is how I found you. Can you let people know where they can find you? Because, I mean, you tweet a lot of valuable information, a lot of great content.
Yeah, definitely. So on Twitter, my handle is @CFurmanATC. Furman is spelled F-U-H-R-M-A-N. And I just have to say this because I forgot to say in the beginning, everything I say during this doesn't reflect my employer or the school or the county that I work in.
Yep, I completely understand that. And we'll make sure to tag you on anything that we put out. We'll include your Twitter handle in there, and that way people can find you and find out the information that you are providing. So, Chris, I certainly appreciate the time that you took today to be on our podcast. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Marcus. I'm glad to come back anytime.
And thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. Now that you've heard our program, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode, so we hope to see you next week. Take care.